Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're kicking off our end-of-year fundraising drive with a special discount offer from our partner, Heritage Foods USA, an online farm-to-table butcher shop specializing in heritage-breed antibiotic-free meats. Donate to Heritage Radio Network before Sunday, December 4th at heritageradionetwork.org/donate, and we'll send you an exclusive discount code for 10% off all Heritage Foods products. Help ensure another year of great food radio, get 10% off delicious and sustainably produced meat, and support small family farms all in one shot. How's that for a holiday miracle? Head to heritageradionetwork.org/donate by Sunday, December 4th to make your contribution.
Hi, this is Mimi Sheraton, author of 1,000 Foods to Eat Before You Die, and you are listening to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Everybody, welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb. I'm Carrie Diamond, editorial director of Cherry Bomb, the indie magazine about women and food. Today's show focuses on the food media. We'll be talking with Adam Rappaport, the funny, smart, and stylish editor-in-chief of Bon Appetit, and the founders of Food 52, Amanda Hesser and Meryl Stubbs. Join us to talk about their new book, holiday tips, and more. First, let's thank our sponsor. This season of Radio Cherry Bomb is brought to you by Knopf, publisher of food's most fabulous icons, from Julia Child to Lydia Bastianich, and home to new literary talents such as Sweet Bitter's Stephanie Dandler. So we have a special treat today. We have the new executive director of Heritage Radio Network with us for a few minutes before we get to our guests, Katie Mosman Wadler. Welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Thank you, Carrie. It's such a treat to join you today.
And you... Do you have a lot of on-air experience? Not that, like, we
no,
do, but...
Barely. I had a great chance to work with Jack Inslee, our executive producer at large, and Odetta Hartman down in Nashville. We did our first Heritage Radio Network on tour miniseries with five chefs down there. So that was, my first, like, full-length show experience. And Aaron and I joined Katie Kiefer on What Doesn't Kill You a couple weeks ago, right before the election. But not too much on-air experience. This is really exciting.
Well, good. We're glad to have you here. Well, it's one of the reasons we wanted you here is because our membership drive is underway. Radio Cherry Bomb is part of Heritage Radio, a nonprofit network that is home to dozens of food-focused radio shows. We rely on our members to keep us alive, so I'd love for all of you to visit heritageradionetwork.org to donate. Also, there is a special Charity Buzz auction underway in which you can co-host Radio Cherry Bomb and hang with us for lunch afterwards. You just have to visit Charity Buzz, right, Katie, and search for Radio Cherry Bomb. You can come on air to talk about your restaurant, your cookbook, any project you have underway, and you can even help us interview the day's guest. So tell us about the whole Charity Buzz thing. You've got a lot of, it's not just Radio Cherry Bomb, you've got a lot of things.
Yeah, we actually, we have 7 lots up for auction. They're all closing today, so it is your last chance
to bid. Oh, I forgot to mention that.
There are about 2 hours and 7 minutes left to bid on the Radio Cherry Bomb co-hosting opportunity. We also have DJ lessons with our very own host, DJ Cherish the Love, which includes a performance at The Roost in the East Village in New York City.
We love her.
If you want to spin in front of a live audience, she's amazing.
DJ Cherish is the bomb.
She is the bomb. We also have 2 dinner parties. One is down in Atlanta with Local 3 and a very special beer pairing. We also have the opportunity to co-host Cooking Issues and have lunch with Dave Arnold. We have a cooking lesson and dinner party for 12 at the Brooklyn Kitchen. And also,
well, wait, Dave Arnold, you have to go back to Dave Arnold shows a little more high energy than Radio Cherry Bomb. So you just have to be you just have to be ready for that if you host, if you co-host that show.
It is the maximum level of energy that can be contained inside of 2 shipping containers, I think.
Absolutely.
But always a good time. And the last one is one of my favorites, a private soba noodle making class with a soba master who...
I retweeted that one because that sounded fabulous.
It's really awesome. That one also closes in 2 hours and 3 minutes. So he is the soba noodle master of the Sun Noodle Company, and that's going to be a super cool class.
All right,
so you
people,
can bring your friends. Please bid. Just a couple hours left.
Break out your credit cards. Go to Charity Buzz and search Heritage Radio Network or search Radio Cherry Bomb and bid. It's a really great someone's taking my picture. It's a really great gift for that person who you just don't know what the hell to get them, you know, like me. So, Katie, thank you so much. We really look forward to working with you next season. It'll be your first full season as our fearless leader. And it's going to be a good season next year.
Thank you so much, Carrie. Have a great show. Welcome to Amanda and Merrill.
Oh, who are in the studio with us. Yay. All right, Katie, take care.
Take care, all. Thank you. Bye-bye.
So.
Hi.
Hi. Hello. Our next guests, Amanda Hesser and Merrill Stubbs, the founders of Food 52, the much-loved recipe resource, and so much more. They've just released their 6th cookbook, which I can't believe, A New Way to Dinner, a playbook of recipes and strategies for the week ahead. We're huge fans of Amanda and Merrill's here at Cherry Bomb, and we are blown away by the community they have built from scratch, just like a great cake. So, Amanda, Merrill, welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Thank you. Thanks so much. So great to be here.
Yeah. How are you two?
Great. A lot better than the last couple of days. It's so beautiful out.
It was like a monsoon.
Yeah.
I literally walked around yesterday for maybe 8 hours in wet Converse, and I was miserable. I'm going to be sick as a dog next week, but it was pretty awful. So you two brought the sunshine. Thank you. Thank you. And, also, thank you for being here, because November and December are like the Olympics of food for companies like yours. Everyone is searching for recipes, advice to get them through the holidays. So I'm curious, what's it like for the Food 52 crew right now?
Well, we just came from our office, which right now is being transformed into a holiday market.
A winter wonderland.
And our art director, I went up the elevator with her this morning, and she's like, I just need to know, have I over-garlanded?
Have I over-garlanded?
Over-garlanded.
There are a lot of garlands. They look great, though.
I say no. I say the answer is no.
It smells
amazing.
It's
sort of hard to over-garland.
Yeah.
So tell everybody why the office is being transformed.
Yeah. So we have a holiday market every year, and we've done it for, this will be our 4th year that we've done a holiday market. And we've done lots of different iterations, different places. We've done it on the Lower East Side. We've done it Union Square. And this year we decided to have it in our home, in our office in Chelsea on West 26th Street, and to have it for tomorrow, Friday, and Saturday and Sunday, and you know, have a place where people can come and see 500 of our products and shop and get free shipping and drink
nibbles and drinks and feel festive.
Yeah, we have lots of programming. I think much of which is now sold out, but you know, things on decorating and all sorts of kind of holiday-like activities.
And we're going to be signing our book on Sunday.
Yeah, so, Merrill, how do you get tickets to this fabulous event?
You don't need tickets. You can just come right on down.
It's open
from 12 to 8.
Open to the public.
Open to the public.
Absolutely.
From 12 to 8, Friday through Sunday, and we're on the 8th floor of 122 West 26th Street.
Fantastic. Well, it's such a highly anticipated event. I've been, I think, every single year. I love going. I see all my friends and see all the beautiful product from your shop. So hopefully we'll see some of you out there. I'm guessing you'll have your cookbook there, Amanda?
Yes, we will. We'll be signing it on Sunday at from
3 to 4:30,
I think. Yeah, 3 to 4:30. Mm-hmm. Our new book, A New Way to Dinner, will be there, as well as our other books, like Genius Recipes, which has been a huge hit, and Kristen McLaurie, who is the author of that book and our creative director, will be romping around as well.
You two are on fire in terms of the cookbooks. I mean, it's one beautiful, useful cookbook after another.
Oh, thank you.
That's so nice to hear.
It really is.
Well, we have a really nice partnership with 10 Speed Press, which does, you know, in our view, the best cookbooks around. And they... you know, came to us, and you know, we worked on creating an imprint called Food 52 Works, but we also have this internal secret weapon, and her name is Allie Slagle, and she is our cookbooks editor, and she So she's in-house, and she also does all of our cookbook coverage, which is a big thing that we love to write about because we believe in cookbooks. And so she is the guiding force behind all of our cookbook production. And we do all of our shoots in our office, too. And James Ransom, our photographer, who we've been working with for many years and who's a dear friend of ours, he also shoots them all. So it's a very kind of like... It feels like a very family operation at this point where we all are very much like on the same page, and our art director, Alexis, and Kristen, our creative director, we all kind of get together and try to continue, like, yes, we're doing a series of books and we're continuing to publish books. We want to keep evolving and, you know, trying new things. And creating a paper publication, it's this like wonderful snapshot of like, what you're feeling and thinking about and how you're living. And I think that's the way we think of our cookbooks. It's like these nice snapshots that kind of capture moments in time in the way Americans are cooking.
Are you two cookbook collectors?
Yes. We try to be disciplined, right? We get so many good cookbooks into the office all the time. And so it's very tempting because they're constantly coming across our desk and there's so many great cookbooks out all the time, more and more. Personally, I think we have access to all of the best ones and we get to cherry pick which ones we take home. And then we also keep a certain number in the office so we can always go over to those shelves if we don't have something at home. So we're lucky to have kind of two sources to satisfy our cookbook needs.
You must have a pretty kick-ass in-office library, I'm imagining.
We do, yeah. It's kind of busting at the seams.
So I love the title, A New Way to Dinner, because you can sort of read it two ways. You know, it's a new way to dinner, like the roadmap, or a new way to dinner. I was like, maybe it's a verb, a new way to dinner.
You wouldn't be the first one to think that, yeah.
So tell us what this book is all about.
Meryl, I think you should do that because you're very good at it. But I just wanted to insert that I think our favorite sort of description that a reviewer wrote about was that it's like a Marie Kondo for the kitchen.
We can just stop the interview.
Yeah, that kind of sums it up.
I think
right?
People will run to their bookstores.
Well, it came about because Amanda and I have actually not co-authored a book together until this one.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I mean, we have written the introductions to all of the Food 52 cookbooks, and we've worked on cookbooks together, but we've never actually been the two sole authors on a cookbook. And, you know, we've always wanted to do it, but we weren't just going to do it to do it. We wanted to wait until we had something to say and something of value because there are lots of great cookbooks out there. So as we've been running Food 52 and getting busier and busier all the time, as all of us are in life, with lots of different priorities to balance, and, you know, it's increasingly important to us to make sure that we have the time to eat well and feed our families well in the midst of all this other stuff that's going on. We had sort of come to... we sort of evolved the way we cooked at home independently and realized once we started talking about it that actually we've been doing a lot of the same things. We'd been adopting a lot of the same strategies and cooking ahead on the weekends because we simply just did not have time anymore to cook during the week. And cooking sort of these component dishes that we would then mix and match in different ways to create 5 weeknight dinners that were not just repetitions of each other. You know, they had some components in common, but were actually something new and fresh every night so that we didn't get bored.
I need that because I'm a big proponent of the Sunday prep. You make the quinoa or whatever, you know, base grainy thing. You roast your vegetables, you clean everything, you chop everything, and then you just sort of combine it throughout the week. But
So you don't need our book.
No, but where I do need the book is I'll just eat the same thing 5 days in a row.
Right.
And then
right.
You're like, ugh.
Yeah, and it's easy to do that. You know, it's easy to sort of make a big stew and then have it until you're like sick and, you know, blue in the face from stew. And then you sort of order out because you're so bored and whatever. So we really had come to this different way of thinking about cooking ahead. And we felt that... There have been books written about make ahead meals or like quick weeknight cooking, but no one had really attacked kind of the nitty gritty of what you need to do in order to set yourself up for success. So lots of recipes, but no one really had like broken down a plan for, you know, here is your menu. Here are the five things you're going to make over the weekend. Here's your grocery list, the complete grocery list you need for your entire week so you can get all your shopping done in one go. And here is the menu for every night, and here's how to combine it in 10 minutes, 15 minutes, whatever, on a Monday or Tuesday.
I love it.
So it's not just a cookbook. It really is a planning tool as much as it is a cookbook, because we feel like for people who like to cook and who think eating well is important, it's not the time in the kitchen that's the barrier. It's the time spent planning and making the grocery lists. And
we did the boring work for people.
Yeah. Yeah.
But because we realized, that is the hurdle.
It is.
And if we could help people with that and get them over that hurdle, hopefully that would like improve their lives, because it definitely has improved ours. I mean, when we cook ahead, it's like you start the week just feeling so much more like placid.
Yeah, you do.
And because empowered.
You don't have to make a decision. You don't. It's like, you know, there are a lot of like company executives who you'll read stories in business publications, and there's like this common thing that it's like, well, they'll wear the same thing every day so that they don't have to make another decision.
I would love to have a uniform.
And I think,
wouldn't you?
Yeah. I miss those
It would
days.
Just make life so easy.
Yeah. And I think that in some ways, this is like our cooking uniform. We don't want to eat the same thing every day. But if we can have all those decisions made in advance so that we don't have to think about it during the week when we're feeling crazed, it makes us happier people, and we have happier home lives, we eat better, and honestly, like, we save money. I mean, there's like so many benefits mm-hmm. to your life that, you know, weren't the driving force behind it, but that are nice, nice results.
Just ignore him.
A lovely man just walked into the room.
I love, you can put your headphones on. I love that you two are expanding into life coaching. I think that's a whole new area of opportunity for Food 52. And speaking of that, I'm going to go into our questions, because we did open it up to our Instagram followers, because I know people love you. And one of them was about time management. So you just answered the food component of the time management thing. But Ali Mish wrote, always curious how they do it all when I feel like I'm drowning over here sometimes.
Oh, so do we. This is one way, right?
This is one way. I feel like I started a technique this past year that has helped me a lot, which is, you know, I have like, you know, a big long list, but I don't, sometimes you get paralyzed by like when you have too many things you have to do. So I just am constantly during the course of a day thinking about what are the next two things I'm going to do. So that like, I found that between like meetings, if I had 10 minutes, because I felt like, oh, I have so much to do, I don't know where to get started, I would like read the New York Times or I would like read Twitter. And so now I know in between a meeting, like I'm going to send off those two emails. And it sounds so like mundane and obvious, but it actually really sort of helped me.
Meryl, how about you?
Well, it's along similar lines, actually. I was just finding myself feeling totally overwhelmed and undone by the to-do list, as I think we all are. And I actually read something a little while ago that I semi-adopted, which was a piece of advice to actually, you can have your to-do list that's complete, but have one thing each day that is the important thing to get done, right? If you do nothing else, you must do this one thing. So I've actually found that really helpful. And sometimes it's two things, right? But really distilling it down to like looking at the list, what are the things that must happen today, and focusing on those. Once you get those done, it's like this liberating feeling of same as having food in your fridge for the week.
Well, it's funny because yesterday, I know what yours was, which was get the lease signed on our extra office space, which we desperately needed to have happen by noon today. And
for this weekend.
It was like Meryl was like, you couldn't stop her. She was like chasing down people's assistants. She was like, we need that thing signed today. We need, you know, where are you? What
persistence?
That was her. She was like, that was her thing that she
that
had
was
to get
my
done.
Thing. It's persistence. True. Nothing else got done.
A lot of, I learned this from my friend Emily Weiss, who founded Glossier and Into the Gloss. She's persistent. Mm-hmm. You know, back when I first met her, I don't know how many years ago, like 6 years ago, I couldn't meet with her And she was like, I just want, can I come in today to meet with you? I was like, no. And she said, can I come in tomorrow? I was like, no. And she's like, well, I'd really like to come in tomorrow. And finally, just like, okay. And I think it's when you really want something, be persistent. And also now with email, I mean, everybody's drowning in email. You can't just send one email and expect an answer. I'm always surprised when people will send one email and get upset. And they're like, well, you never hope back. I'm like, you send it again. You know, it's okay. It's okay. All right. Second question comes from R.M. Bonita. Would love to hear how your vision for the Provisions Food 52 shop has evolved since its launch in 2013. Thanks. Excited for the show. Thank you. All right. Nice. So the shop.
Yeah.
Tell us about your shop.
So the shop, which we did call Provisions early on, and then we actually got rid of that name how long ago now, like a year and a half ago, 2 years ago,
yeah
two, I think. Just because we decided it was too hard to try and grow two brands instead of one. So
but we appreciate that this
yes we do so whenever we name. Hear that name, we know it's someone who has been familiar with us for a while. I think the main shift over time, aside from sort of expanding our assortment to branch out beyond the kitchen and more into home, which is something that we've been doing gradually since we launched it, is we've also been focusing on creating more of our own products over the past year or two. So that was a big focus for us this past year, working with makers that we already have developed strong relationships with to collaborate on designing new products, whether that's, you know, an iteration on something that they're already doing or something that we really see as a whole in the market or a place where we have a point of view.
We have a great collaboration right now with our friends at Madewell.
We do.
That's fantastic. Yeah, the products are online right now.
Yeah. And we've worked with John O'Pandolfi, who does ceramics for a lot of New York restaurants, like 11 Madison Park, Nomad, and designed an entire line of dinnerware with him. And we have actually two other of our own branded lines of dinnerware as well. And we're just finding that people, you know, these are places where there are lots of beautiful options for dinnerware, but there wasn't really anything that served the particular needs that we were kind of looking for, which was to be sort of something you could use every day, but was beautiful, but also neutral enough to really be a canvas for the food, which is the focus, right?
All right. The next question, got to jump to the next one, from the folks at Blue Marble Ice Cream. They would love to know what you look for when choosing a team. It seems like Food 52 is a well-oiled machine. Hiring.
I think they look primarily for personality traits. I mean, obviously there are areas of expertise that we need we have needed as we've grown. And I would say, you know, the bigger we get, the more that
is true.
Mm-hmm. Yes. But we are looking for people who like don't take no for an answer, who are problem solvers, don't see problems, but see kind of like opportunities to figure things out. And so a lot of that comes through in conversations. Like, I think that our interview process is very good and thorough, but is also probably more maybe personal than, because we want to get to know what kind of person you are. I often will talk about your childhood or,
you know, interests outside of work.
Yeah. Cause it can be very telling. It is very telling. And, I think we found more success with that route than just hearing someone talk about what they've done professionally. I mean, of course, that's relevant, but I think the character is more of a deciding factor for us.
Yeah, just to add something really quickly to that, I think related is that we're looking for people who are paying attention to what's going on in the world. It's not all about what they think about our business or what they can do for our business, but relative to sort of trends and the directions that they're sort of seeing in related areas. I think when you get stuck in a rut, that's like one of the worst things that can happen to a growing company. And so we want to make sure people have their heads up.
How big is the Food 52 team now?
65 people.
Wow. Great. And we'll see them all this weekend at the
most of them,
pop-up,
yes.
I'm imagining. So, all right, it's time to jump over to the speed round.
Uh-oh.
So it's easy. It's easy. Coffee or tea? Meryl, you can start each.
Coffee.
How do you take it?
Milk, tiny bit of sugar.
Amanda?
Mine's kind of sad. I would say coffee, but I've moved to decaf, and it just it's lost its charms.
Adam, you can provide sound effects over there if you'd like.
Oi.
I know.
Okay, not to break into the speed round, but I was at a coffee shop in between the monsoon yesterday. I was like, I just need a coffee. So I stopped, I don't know, Irving Farm, I think, over in the Lower East Side. Mm-hmm. And the guy in front of me ordered a soy decaf Americano. And I love soy milk, and I don't know, but I was like,
like,
why?
What's the point,
you need a new drink. I was like, maybe you should drink tea.
If I can jump in, I was at Gristiti's, one of the wonderful supermarkets here in New York, and a woman in front of me was buying lactose-free skim milk.
Oh no.
And I'm like, is it even milk? Like, what's
what
left?
Is it?
It's just like white water? I don't know. I was like,
did you wrestle it out of her hands and tell her who you were and say, I can't let you make this purchase?
No, but I did make a snarky comment on my Instagram story. How I sort of like sort of secretly snapped a photo of it. I was on the little conveyor belt.
All right. So not to pick on you for drinking decaf. We know whatever it takes to get you through the day, right? All right. Next, sweet or salty? Meryl.
Salty.
Amanda.
Salty.
Meryl, what's in your fridge?
A lot of cheese.
A lot of cheese. Okay.
Her nickname is Backup Cheese.
That's, oh, and I think I knew that. I don't know how, but I knew that. How about you?
I always have a lot of eggs. I never want to run out of eggs.
Huh. Mm. Okay.
Eggs and butter.
It's like Armageddon supplies.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. What kitchen tool do you use the most?
Wooden spoon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Amanda?
Well, I guess that I'm going to tell you the tool that I use probably most often that isn't necessarily among unusual tools, which mm-hmm. is my meat pounder.
Oh, a meat pounder. Okay.
Because it's really good for crushing garlic and
like,
it's also beautiful, yours. It's
it feels so nice.
It's a round, flat, stainless steel object. I mean, you could display it.
And it'll smash anything, and I find that very pleasing. Sorry.
You win the award for most unique kitchen tool. All right. If you were trapped on a desert island with one food celebrity, who would it be? Meryl.
Oh.
First person who comes to mind.
Nigella Lawson.
Oh, that's a good one.
Sorry.
You can't pick the same.
We just met her recently, so.
She's fabulous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Fergus Henderson. He's so fun. And, lively and interesting. So.
And you wouldn't starve.
We wouldn't starve, but even if we did, we'd go down
laughing.
What are you reading right now?
I am actually reading the first of the Neapolitan novels.
Elena Ferrante's. Mm-hmm. I haven't read those yet, but it's on my growing list. I saw the New York Times list of the 100 most important books of the year, and I cringed at how few of them I had read this year. But I read a lot of cookbooks.
There you go.
So that counts.
Yeah.
Amanda, what are you reading?
I'm reading two books. Mm-hmm. One that I haven't made much progress on, which is a biography of Tolstoy, and another on financial statements.
I didn't know that.
That's my nighttime reading.
Hot.
It puts me right to sleep, just like a baby.
Oh, that's so funny. Where would you two like to travel to next?
Oh, Iceland, I think. Yeah, we've had a bunch of people on our team go recently, and the photos are pretty hard to resist.
Well, I guess I'm going to say we're planning, knock on wood, a trip to Indonesia. And so I'm pretty excited about that.
Family trip?
Yeah.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, Amanda and Meryl, thank you so much for being with us today. Congrats on the new book. Everybody should go check it out. And if you are in New York, come hang out with all of us at the pop-up this weekend. It's going to be a blast.
Much. Thanks.
Great.
We will be right back with Adam Rappaport after this word from our sponsor.
imagine the culinary world without the influence of Julia Child, Marcella Hazan, Edna Lewis, Maher Joffrey, Lydia Bastianich, and Judith Jones? It's impossible. We have the iconic publishing house Knopf to thank for bringing the writings and the recipes of these women to life. Knopf's great tradition of supporting new voices continues today with Smitten Kitchen's Deb Perlman, Sweet Bitter's Stephanie Danler, and Butter Baked Goods' Rosie Dakin. Check out Knopf's great collection of fiction, nonfiction, and cookbooks at your favorite bookstore. Keep reading and keep cooking with Knopf. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Radio Cherry Bomb. Most of you are familiar with the next guy we're about to talk to. He's Adam Rappaport, the editor-in-chief of Bon Appetit. Adam, you missed your intro earlier where I called you stylish and fun and smart.
I'll take all of those.
Yes. A former GQ editor, Adam was tasked with transforming the magazine into a modern hub, into a media hub for a modern food-focused audience. He's a great guy and someone I've known for a long time. Adam, welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Thanks for having me. Very excited to be here.
Yeah, how are you doing?
Well, hungry, first of all.
Hungry.
Should I pre-order the margarita pizza, or should I just get here first and then order once we're done?
You know, it's not packed to the gills today, so I don't think. Sometimes I've sat here and it's taken an hour to get a pizza, which is not easy when you need to run and host a radio show, but I think we'll be okay after this. We won't starve, that's for sure. But you're probably not that hungry anyway, because you guys are flooded with food.
Yeah, we have a beautiful test kitchen, much like Amanda and Merrill do. And ours is on the 35th floor of the World Trade Center, which is kind of an unusual place to have a kitchen. And it overlooks that cool Calatrava train center right there. And yeah, I find myself, because it's such a beautiful spot with these beautiful windows and tons of natural light and good food, I spend a lot of time there just kind of grazing and hanging out and like, what are you guys making? What's going on? Can I taste that?
And people must send you a ton of food.
You know, we don't get as much as that. There's like the section where our web team works. There's always like the crazy, like they're doing a popcorn story for some reason. And then you get there's a lot of crazy flavored popcorns out there right now. Those like come in like the barrels and stuff, you know, the tins. So there's a lot of wacky, those sort of stuff. But honestly, my whole thing, and I'm sure maybe you relate to this, I try not to snack.
I'm getting better at it.
Yeah, because that, yeah, I think, is the downfall of a lot of us.
Yes.
Is those that 3 p.m. meal, which you don't really need a meal at 3 p.m.
Absolutely.
You need something to tide you over.
We do get we don't get that much stuff sent to Cherry Bomb, but we do get nice stuff, so it's hard not to try it. Because people who send it to us tend to know what we're all about. When I was at Yahoo Food, the stuff we got would have just—I didn't know whether to laugh or to cry.
Yeah, a lot of us in that Slim Jim family, and you're like, I don't need this.
One of my writers at Yahoo Food, Rachel Tepper, actually got a giant portrait of herself made out of Cheetos.
Ooh, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, cool. I was the only one who hated it.
And very evocative of our soon-to-be president. But you know what's great? Because you used to work in the
factory. What the hell do you do with a giant Cheetos poster of yourself with actual Cheetos? You do not want that.
I like Cheetos.
Right, someone's going to send it to you now, and you're going to be like, I should have agreed with Carrie that that's the worst idea ever.
But anyways, no, I liked when you worked in fashion, and as did I at GQ for all those years. That was good in terms of the stuff they sent you. Like, I'd never bought a grooming product until I left GQ, and I was shocked to find out, like,
How much
facial moisturizer costs. I went to that place Melanie Getz. I'm like, I'm going to get some facial moisturizer my first day in BA or whatever. And they're like, oh, that's $27. And I was like, what? Like, that, I had no idea.
Good beauty products are expensive. And the sad part is they work.
Yeah. And I got hooked on them. And so now I buy these $27 facial moisturizers. And I'm like, yeah, but it makes me feel really good in the morning.
That's where, so like I said, you and I have known each other for a long time. And you had me on your radio show a while ago, so thank you. It took
me
a while to return the favor, but you're here and we're happy. But we really bonded when I was at Lancome doing PR. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh, yeah.
Lancome,
the new resource.
Did you know you almost got me fired from my job?
Oh, God.
Did you know that?
I didn't.
You didn't?
No.
Because you sent me a bottle of champagne after that, and I thought maybe you knew that I almost got fired. You did a story on our supermodel
spokesperson, Daria Werbowy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
At the time. It was a great story,
oh,
really
there was
funny.
Something. What was it? Because she was also a. I don't know if you teeter off to my wife's work. My wife's Simone Schubach, who's an artist, but Daria knew Simone's work, and my wife was obsessed with her because Daria, I guess, has good hair and stuff and cool eyes, and there was a weird connection.
I'm happy to take credit for it.
I don't know, but Daria was like, wait, I know your wife. And we're like, really?
I love your wife, so that's cool. But no, so you did the story that was very funny, and I forget who took the pictures of Daria, but she was like naked and oiled and rolled in sand. And there were some things about the photos and the story that the Lancôme team objected to heavily, maybe about the Mile High Club membership or
I was not the photographer nor the photo editor, so I had nothing to do with that. And if she made some references to the Mile High Club, which I vaguely remember now, those were her quotes. I would never set her up that way. No.
I think the head of marketing wanted me fired, and I read the story and I went into my office and I closed the door and I think I curled up in the fetal position on the floor because I was still fairly new. And I was like, okay, how can I spin this? And it was the February issue. And I was like, do you know how many guys are going to go buy that fragrance for their girlfriends?
Yes.
As I was like, oh my God, you know.
And that's, why you're good at what you do.
Holy cow. So I was there for like six more years. So it all worked out. So thank you for that. That was a memorable day in the office, courtesy of Adam Rappaport.
And I didn't even know. All right.
So let's talk about Bon Appetit.
Yes.
So how big is your staff now?
Wow, that's a really good question. On the edit side, probably similar to probably in that 50-ish sort of range. And then there's more on the publishing, which is everything from ad sales to marketing to promotion. We also, Bon Appetit sort of absorbed or partnered up with Epicurious about a year and a half ago, which is also a Condé Nast brand. Kind of the oldest food website out there. Been around for 21 years now. So it's like BA, Epicurious. We have a branded content division. This and that. So it's called the Food Innovation Group is what our whole sort of little mini company within a company is called.
Do you have a 3D printer? Are you printing pizza?
No, we don't have a 3D printer, but one of our old art editors, designers brought in like this cool old looking giant contraption that prints. So I don't even know what it's called. Designers know it's like can do these cool like ombre prints and stuff with gradient colors. And like designers, I did a photo of it on my Instagram stories and people are like, wait a minute, you guys got a D974 whatever? And I'm like, I guess we do. Yeah. So we have some cool things.
Food innovation. I love that. I really loved your editor's letter from a few months back where you talked about creativity and having to get the hell out of the office.
Yes.
And you said basically lunch, right? I'm kind of paraphrasing here, but you basically said work is just a series of soul crushing meetings. And that if you really want to be creative, you need to get out of the office and have lunch by yourself, preferably with a glass of wine.
Yeah. I mean, and I talked about this with Christine Mulkey, who, you know, is our executive editor and now is on sort of a contributing editor. And you know, Anna Wintour says the same thing. It's like, no, very few good ideas happen at your desk. You're sort of alerted to the world when you're out in the world, and that's where you find inspiration. And it's interesting just going to a different setting, feeling the energy within a restaurant, and the if it's a good restaurant, their attention to sort of beauty and detail and food, and there's some love in the room, and you can interpret that however you want, but it's alive. And so often your desk and your computer that you're staring at is not. And it is important, just get out. And it's interesting, like when you travel or when you're on a work trip, how so many ideas flood into your head. And when you're at work, you're just kind of doing work, if that makes sense.
It's an awful trend and trap that we've fallen into that everybody works at their desk. Everybody eats lunch at their desks.
Oh, my God, yeah. I was at Time Out New York from 97 to 2000. And my friend Brett Martin, who's a really good food writer, is a main food writer at GQ now. And he and I would always make a point to go out to lunch. And we'd walk down to Katz's or like Cafe Habana right there in Nolita. And we'd always try to get other people to come, and everyone's like, no, I'm too busy. I'm like, dude, you're literally getting paid like $12 an hour to be the radio editor of Time Out New York. Like, they're not paying you enough to not go enjoy yourself. Like, get out of the office, take your 45 minutes, you've earned it. The desk and the computer will be there when you get back.
It's just a sea of seamless now.
Yeah. Well, what I will do is like, I will at least go down to the test kitchen. I'll make myself something. And again, at least there's a creative moment of sort of like, I'm going to make some sort of avocado-y toast thingamajig. I'll do delivery now and then where it's just kind of slammed schedule wise with meetings. But I try to go do something.
I feel like all the food people need to get together and start a campaign to get people to get away from their desks.
It helps. Yeah. No. And I mean, I get why you're there, but it's the same thing as going to the gym. Like once you are at the gym or wherever, you're glad you're there. It's just getting yourself there.
So you also mentioned in the letter that you're not the person who necessarily gets to go out to all the restaurants and check out everything that's new.
No.
Meet all the talent.
We have like, and you're a boss, so you know what goes on. We have, your job as a boss is, it's kind of the same thing, I guess, going back to fashion. If you're a fashion designer, you know, if you're Marc Jacobs, you are not literally designing all the clothes, but you have the vision for what your brand is about, and you oversee a lot of talented people who realize that brand, that vision. And at Bon Appetit, Julia Kramer and Andrew Knowlton are sort of two restaurant czars, and they travel the country each year to put together our best new restaurants list for our September issue. And I trust them implicitly. I love the way they both write. And my job is just to help take what their restaurant sort of expertise and point of view is, and how do you craft that into a package that looks beautiful, that has a point of view, that is fun, can work on different platforms. But that's, yeah, that's, it's an interesting thing as boss. You're not doing everything yourself, but you touch everything. That sounds a little creepy, sorry.
But people must ask you constantly for restaurant recommendations.
Yes, and that's when I forward them to Andrew or Julia.
I always say I'm the worst person to ask.
I don't know, but the question I hate, and I'm sorry, sorry to say, but people are like, oh, what's your favorite restaurant in New York? And I'm like, can you be more specific? Like, are you talking Brooklyn? Are you talking Manhattan? Are you talking like fancy? Are you talking like whatever? Like, narrow the parameters a little bit. Like, do you want to go on a date? Is this place you're taking your mom? Or is this place you're going out with like your 8 friends from college you haven't seen in 5 years?
So we'll be specific. Where do you take Simone? Where's the place you guys go to just have a fun night?
So my wife, Simone, there's places I would like to go that, yeah, she's not as fan of. And I'm always like,
see, I stumped you already.
No, I know. And I'm just trying to think of some place we actually have gone on. This is such an old school place. Just randomly, we end up at, do you ever go to Red Cat from way back in the day?
Which is, do they still have the green beans? Tempura green beans?
They still have the tempura green beans and that great.
The mustard dipping sauce.
And they have the zucchini that's sort of shredded and quick sauteed fried with almonds.
Jimmy has a show here.
Oh, Jimmy Bradley. Yeah. Uh-huh. And I love Jimmy. Uh-huh. And what I love about Red Cat is it's one of those restaurants which is unique in New York that, It's a little bit more than a neighborhood restaurant, certainly, but because of rent and lease, like places get pushed out. And I know like a couple of years ago he was having to re-up his lease after 15 years, and they were going to double the rent and all that, and they decided to stick it out. And it's just great. You can go to a restaurant that's packed every night. They're welcoming. The food's going to be good. And then we live a couple of blocks from there. And there's so many places in New York that are hot for a couple of years and then you never hear from again. And I love when the good places stick around because they deserve to.
Anything that's new that should be on our radar?
I had a fancy meal at Le Cucu the other night. Have you gone there?
I did. Rob, my boyfriend, and I had dinner there on election night.
Oh, God.
We had a 5:45 reservation. Wow. I figured we'll get an early dinner. And then we'll go home and open a champagne bottle, and that didn't happen.
Wah, wah.
Yeah. No, Le Cucu's beautiful. Roman and Williams designed that space.
It's interesting that, so beautiful Roman and Williams design space, beautiful open kitchen, that cool little standing bar, the marble bar, the lighting, the cool wrought iron chandeliers. It's interesting. So Daniel Rose, the chef who owns Spring in Paris, American chef who went to Paris as a young guy, opened a restaurant, came back. Here now doing this thing with Steven Starr, but the food is very old school French, which is very at odds with so much of the dining trends now, which are more vegetable driven and more fresh and a lot of different sort of international influences converging. And you're getting like sweetbreads with like a reduced cream sauce or reduced sauce. You know, you're getting like the lobster and like it's I'm curious to see how it survives. I like it, but it is like it's old school.
It's very grown up and very sexy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's packed every night. You can barely get a reservation there.
I think it's good. Yeah, it's grown up. It's sophisticatedly sexy.
Yes.
Yeah, and I like that. So I thought that was a cool vibe.
And the city needs more of that. I went to another restaurant recently. I won't mention it because I loved it, and I'm about to say something critical. The font size on the menu.
Oh my God. Yeah.
It must have been the descriptions were like 0.5. And I just thought they don't want anyone under the age of 25 here. So I made the waitress read the server, read the menu to me. And I'm sure she was like, all right, old person, and get out of the restaurant.
And I'm like, I don't want to be one of those persons who has to turn on like the on the flashlight on my iPhone that's just like blazingly bright, and you're in the it's just like, oh no. I also love King, which is King's a new restaurant, great. Which is two women chefs from River Cafe in London. And it's what I love about that on the opposite side of the cuckoo. It's like the most simplest home cooking Italianish food, which is what River Cafe does and charges an exorbitant price for it in outside London, and deservedly so. And it's just like, I love that food sometimes doesn't have to be flashy. It doesn't have to be trendy. Does it taste delicious? Yes. Are you enjoying yourself? Yes. And then you're like, I'm going to come back here. And that's where Simone and I went on a date recently.
King is wonderful. It feels like one of those restaurants that everybody wants in their neighborhood.
Yeah, and exactly. And they're both Jess and the, I forget the other chef, but they're charming and awesome.
Mm-hmm. And how about cities? We're so New York focused sometimes because, hey, we're in New York.
We live in New York.
Any cities you guys are hot on right now?
It's interesting. You know, there's D.C. was the city we named as sort of restaurant city of the year. I grew up in Washington, D.C., I was shocked because when I grew up there in the 80s, you know, there was literally Morton's, Ruth's Chris Steakhouse, Duke Ziebert's, which is an old school D.C. restaurant. But it was a very just meat and potatoes, Capitol Hill lobbyist sort of city. And over the past 8 years under Obama, there has been an influx of a more diverse, vibrant sort of population and entrepreneurial spirit. And you have so many amazing restaurants that we named Bad Saint, the Filipino restaurant, as our number two restaurant. You had Rose's Luxury. There's all these just interesting, cool restaurants. The only downside is they're big into not taking reservations. And people at both Rose's and Bad Saint will be waiting in line for 3 to 4 hours just to get a table.
How does that work in a place like D.C.? I feel like there are a lot of business taking place.
Yeah, and those places are small. I mean, Bad Saint's small. It's like 25 seats or something. You're not getting that Capitol Hill lobbyist crowd. But I think that's what's interesting enough about D.C. now is that there's enough of another crowd that will patronize these places and will wait in line for a few hours, which I think is great. And that was not the experience I had in growing up in D.C. So it's been wonderful to see that city sort of evolve and come to life.
Funnily enough, I was in D.C. this weekend and didn't go to that many restaurants because I was there to see my brother and sister-in-law and their two little girls who are... The little one is 17 months, which is not
restaurant age.
Nope. But like, we did check out a few cool places like Chaya. They do these wonderful vegan vegetarian tacos, Baked and Whisked, the bake shop. There
Ooh, haven't been
so
there.
Many bake shops. Yeah. That one was great. We walked past Georgetown Cupcakes. And there was a line down the block. God. It was like the old Magnolia thing back here. People will still stand on line for cupcakes,
yes,
Adam.
I know.
Despite all the hard work you've done, they will still do that. And I met on Monday with this wonderful woman, Anne, who founded Misfit Juice. Oh. And she is part of a group in D.C. called Pineapple D.C. And it's all these women in the food space who've gotten together to kind of meet once a month and talk about issues. But Misfit, her juice company, is really fascinating. She's part of the Chobani Incubator Program.
Oh, cool.
But she's buying up basically like food scraps and the sort of ugly fruit and vegetables that nobody else wants to use.
And juices them.
And juicing them.
That's genius.
It's brilliant.
Yeah.
And I have to say the product's amazing.
Because if you buy like the nice, if anyone who's trying to make juice at home, it's astonishing the amount of produce you're buying and what you're paying for. And then you realize like, oh, now I understand why that green juice from Juice Press or wherever is $9.
Absolutely. But Misfit, I think, is one to
watch.
That's
cool. So good name.
Everybody, right? Everybody needs to put that on their radar. Since we're talking about D.C. and that city is inevitably going to change over the very rapidly.
Speaking of Morton's and Ruth's Chris, big comebacks in the next 4 years.
No kidding. One question we've gotten a lot of in the past few weeks has regarded the role of food media after the election. So I was curious, what are you doing at Bon App in response, if anything?
No, that's a great question. I mean, we the day after the election, I went to Philadelphia and canvassed for Hillary Clinton with my wife and friends. Sort of a group from Brooklyn that organized this outing. so I got back to work midday on Wednesday, and it was gray here. And the whole day was just kind of a daze. But Thursday, we got the entire staff together, and that's the question. Like, what are we going to do? Like, how should we react to the climate of this country right now? Regardless of who you voted for, things changed. And as a food brand that people come to not for political views, like, I don't necessarily want to be preachy, but we pride ourselves on being culturally relevant and connected. So a couple of things we did, we talked it out, and I said, I don't know what the answer is, but I do know we need to ask ourselves that question. Lily Sherman and Meryl Rothstein, two of our editors, had a great idea. We launched this dinner series called Family Meal, which is, yeah, we're right, we got on your phone. And we got a bunch of restaurants together for in New York to family meal is when the kitchen staffs and the whole crew get together before they open, and everyone sort of makes it each person's day a different dish for the crew. And if you've ever been to a restaurant, there is a lot of immigrant workers in the kitchen, and they are sort of what make restaurants go, and we should celebrate that fact. So we're doing these dinner series, inviting guests in to have family meal with the staff. All the proceeds will go to an immigrant workers' rights foundation. We did Wild Air, the amazing wine bar on the Lower East Side, Olmsted in Brooklyn, Cafe Ultra Paradiso is coming up, Ignacio's restaurant, and then we're doing the fourth one,
Reynard,
Andrew Tarlow's place in Brooklyn.
Are tickets sold out for all of them?
So the first two are sold out, but Reynard and Ultra Paradiso, I believe, are still available. Called Family Meal. I don't know if you have the link there, but you can go into the Bon Appetit Instagram feed and you can find it there. And then we're going to take it to DC, hopefully around the Million Women March on January 21st. We're going to LA to do three family meals, San Francisco to do three family meals, and hopefully at in Atlanta, where we had our number one restaurant of the year, Staple House.
That's fantastic. So we'll tweet out the link.
So we're doing that, and then we're also doing some stuff in our March issue on along a similar vein in terms of my whole feeling about what's great about this country and what came under such fire during the campaign and election is diversity. And if you look at the food scene in America, there is nowhere else in the world that is as diverse, and the breadth of what's available is stunning. And that's something that should be celebrated. And the reason it's so great is because of diversity and the people making the food and the ingredients and the curiosity for it. And anyone who loves food can appreciate that. So we're doing something with that in the March issue. But like I said, I don't know if it's our place to be explicitly political, but I do think it's our place to be at least implicitly political in a way that at least still makes sense with who our brand is and to celebrate food and the people who make it.
It's a tough question because, you know, sometimes people just want their food media to be their refuge where they can get away from
it's an
all
escape.
Of this.
Yeah, sure. But like I said, if you do it in a celebratory way, it's still escapist. People don't want to be lectured to, but they do want to learn and they do want to see delicious food made by wonderful people.
Do you see Bon App covering more of those companies and brands that are sort of on the intersection of food and social justice?
I think first of all,
the hot bread kitchens of the world and Drive Change.
It's interesting. If there's an interesting story to tell, then as storytellers, that should be part of your job. Whether what's interesting now compared to when you and I were coming up, there's so many more platforms in which to tell it. And like there's, I don't know, for those, if you have younger listeners who follow Teen Vogue, Teen Vogue's Instagram had a series of video stories with Native American teenage girls talking about their experience. And this was sort of connected to the pipeline protests. Mm-hmm. And it was just fascinating. I'm a 47-year-old guy and I'm watching that. Like, this is so cool. It's interesting. There are interesting ways to tell stories that can connect to your reader or user. You just have to know how to tell them in a way that still fits in with what your mission is.
Okay, as always, we're running out of time.
Yeah.
So we're going to do a super speedy.
That's good, because I'm hungry.
Short and speed round. Coffee or tea?
Coffee, iced red eye every morning.
What kitchen tool do you use the most?
Chef's knife, and that really is true. It's cliche, but a big chef's knife, and not too big, like 8 inches, sorry.
If you were trapped on a desert island with one food celebrity, who would it be?
Oh, God. My wife, that's obvious. A kind of Jacques Pepin in his prime. Most charming guy ever.
Where would you like to travel to next?
I would love to go back to Asia, perhaps Thailand, maybe Vietnam. I have a 9-year-old boy who doesn't eat anything other than mac and cheese, kind of. So we'll see how that goes.
We didn't even get to talk about him, but next time we'll have to have you back next season. So Adam, thank you so much for coming all the way out here. That's it for today's show. Thanks as always to our engineer, Dave Tatasciore, and much love to Knopf for supporting this season of Radio Cherry Bomb and for publishing such beautiful books like the works of Julia Child. Don't forget about the Charity Buzz auction. You can check it out. There's still a little bit time left to bid on co-hosting Radio Cherry Bomb. If you're lucky, you can come and help us interview a cool guest like Adam. And also, we will be in Indianapolis on Monday, December 12th with the folks at Printext doing a special panel about women in the food scene there. So if you're in Indianapolis or have friends who live there, spread the word. Thank you for listening, everybody. You're the bomb.
Lopez, and I'm the co-founder of Food Heaven Made Easy, an online resource for people into healthy eating that is delicious, cost-effective, and relatively painless. Radio Cherry Bomb is a joint production of Cherry Bomb Magazine and the Heritage Radio Network. To subscribe or learn more about the magazine, visit cherrybomb.com. You know who I think is the bomb? Carolina Contreras, founder of Mestrizos.com, a community that celebrates and promotes beauty, identity, and empowerment, specifically within the Spanish-speaking Afro-Latina community.